This is Sunday, Father's Day, June the 16th, 1996. Greetings, Commander, if you're here yet.
Good afternoon. In the light of radiance. Maybe we should call this for all my children. As the world turns.
Happy Father's Day.
Thank you. It always seems like great problems, but may you always be blessed with as fine a family as I have. You only are able to perceive the negative aspects of living. And that's unfortunate, because you have enough background to relatively evaluate every circumstance. And yet, in the ebb and flow of energy, it seems like that which you stop the most often on yourself, the wall that hits you, seems to be negative in aspect. When you have grown to the point of, let us say, an Ormond McGill in the late shadow years, having played with the mind and the aspects of mind for almost 90 years, you realize that there is nothing in life except happiness and joy. And that if you seem to have no place to turn, it's because you're not turned in the right direction. And even at that, there are always alternatives. Again, I have to start with apologies. Even on Father's Day, things come up that have to be attended, and this is the only day that we can attend business. And I have been asked to share some things with you, because life just continues moving right along. The same enemies continue to attack and fail to ever understand. The facts are, unless you go dig out facts, you can't ever understand, because you can only balance everything you hear on opinion. And if you have not gathered up your documents in order to form a valid opinion, you're going to be warped by the wrong one. That's just the way it is. I personally don't care. And that annoys Dorma considerably. I care about the impact on my family, on my children, on those of you who pay dearly for the attacks and the assaults and the misery. But I consider those lessons, lessons in discernment, lessons in pure learning, and you are going to have to simply put down your own ego long enough to look at it for what its value might be to you, anything that comes against you. What does it hurt if it's wrong, if it's a lie? Usually only your feelings. Because the liar will eventually tell on himself. On the other hand, when the adversary or the adversarial players fax letters, send copies of letters all over that are quite insulting and even threatening, obviously, we will hear later about how we never express their opinions. So when we put them in the paper, then we are countered with wasting time, wasting money, and dealing with negative aspects of another's personality. So which is it? Which do you do? They send things demanding they be published, and then when you publish them, that annoys them. Well, our paper space is limited enough. that's up to Dr. Young as to what we can have in the paper. But when we have to leave out our own product section, that's very costly, because that is the income that keeps us going here. So always there are a lot of decisions and choices to be made. Some of these things impact on legal proceedings. Some are legal proceedings. And you need to know when you do something thoughtlessly, carelessly, how it comes back to rest on the heads and in the pocketbooks of others, not just yours. This is going to be another interesting week. It's going to be interesting here on in, and totally demanding of time. And by all the help that you once give the other parties, they have now managed to merge every lawsuit, even the ones that were before anybody was here, into one big humongous confusion. But I will honor the ones who have sent a letter and have complained greatly, and will listen through it. And it will also be a board of directors meeting for the Phoenix Institute. Who do you want to read these? Rick received a copy. Al, it was faxed to the office. Who all else got a copy? Somebody read it. Then I want somebody to read a couple of these lawsuits, the most recent ones, from Nevada.
I volunteered for that.
Okay. And then I want to go over yesterday's writing and today's. So we're going to be pretty filled up, but we're going to get around to talking about UFOs and aliens and me.
This letter is dated June 10th. I received it on Friday from Leon Fort. Let me preface the letter by saying that my last name is actually Courtright. It's spelled C-O-R-T-R-I-G-H-T. I dropped it quite a number of years ago for convenience. Literally everyone would misspell it, and it became such a bother, I just flat dropped it for convenience. So Leon addresses this to Rick Martin Courtright and spells the name wrong, which is typical. I am so sick of this Green Brigade crap. Rick Martin Courtright. This elderly sweet couple you speak of has been playing God with our money. Yet no one has the right to withhold what belongs to another, as well as sue him with his own money. This was done to me. You all have been using our money willfully against us since the day that I asked for it to be returned. This has been done and is being done against our will, while all of you go on weakly, casting stones at everyone who understands your acts of injustice. As Hatton says, why should I pay my enemies? Quote, because I have promissory notes signed by his number one boy, E.J. Ecker. By his own conditions, he labels me his enemy. This explains why I was sued. I am a free spirit who refused to be controlled. Anyone who calls their loan or questions Doris and E.J. or Hatton is questioning God, and therefore they are the enemy. It is absolute blasphemy, every word spoken by your commander. How can man or God preach freedom of nation while using another person's money without their permission against the individual who lent that money in the first place? You are all guilty of straining at gnats while swallowing camels. You all take money from EJ to pay your bills, obtain attorneys, fill your bellies at the village grill, and speak ill of the Green Brigade. Your term, not mine. Quote, when others have to lose so that you might gain, it is certainly not called success.
unquote. Your commander's words. Over 3 years ago, I asked for our money so we could go our way. So why am I, Eleanor, and now Betty, Sherry, Rod, and Ed, plus all the attorneys, a part of the Green Brigade? And whatever happened to poor Mitch? Had EJ paid us our money instead of suing us, allowed George Green a peaceful divorce, with which Ed Cleary and I tried to assist, perhaps none of this Green Brigade name-calling and suing would be going on today. We have now been stripped of everything because I stood and continue to stand on righteous principles. All of you with your self-righteous thoughts have prejudged any and all people who stand up to Doris and EJ's God, who has blinded all of you with twisted and bent words coming through Dharma. Leon's often spoken words of unconditional love have been blasted apart, ripped, and torn.
Doesn't this sound like love in its unconditional form?
It also sounds like someone else wrote that letter.
Exactly. Yeah. That's referring to Leon as another person.
He's referring to himself as another person.
Now to be unconditional hate? No. Conditions only change feelings. Hatan has created those conditions. I only hold dishonor and disrespect for all who continue to support such conditions. Do you know what 3.5 years is like to a 90-year-old woman who wanted her own soil to plant some seeds? Or for me, hearing, what happened to all our money? Can't we use my money to buy land?
Sure. Don't you know Esther's doing that every morning?
Now, let me explain, readers. I'm reading this against my will, so just so we're clear on that point. This is not the position of management. This is a letter from Leon Fort. I'm sorry, Mom. The Eckers have it all. This is absolute love? No wonder Hatan has conditions. That's how every action taken is egotistically justified. The Green Brigade, as you call it, are people who are fearless, brave enough to stand up and speak out what they know as fact. They have all lived on both sides of the coin, and one-sided truth shall no longer stand. Ecker, Hatan, God, have made some big errors. Behold, who shall protect humanity from Hatan and this God's absolute love that by his conditions have chewed his once beloved people up and spit them out? You say Doris and EJ, Hatan, have harmed no one? Many a man who lost all his wealth has been known to blow his own brains out or have killed the ones responsible.
That is a threat, pure and simple.
Words alone have been known to kill, and these are special talents of Doris, with or without God's help. I once loved all of you like long-lost family, including Doris and DJ Ecker, and believed every word Hatan spoke until I was on the receiving end of the poison pen. It is and has been a rude, crude awakening, I can assure you. Looking back, it was the loving words from Thomas and Druthea that drew me here. Whatever happened to loving Thomas, Rick? Has he also accepted the absolute love of Hatan, driven by lawsuits? Want some real truth, Rick? Look in the mirror. You and many others have lost your unique selves and hardened your hearts in justification that our money belongs rightfully to you and this God. No, no, no. It does not and never shall. Until EJ gives back what belongs to others, success shall never be yours. How long will all go on blaming George Green without taking responsibility? If the Institute goes down, it will be by the hands of Ecker, God Hatan, and his self-righteous ego along with his ground crew attitude of same. Sue the bastards. This is where every single attorney came from that you label the Green Brigade. Your actions and lawsuits created it all. All this crying over George Green and the gold has only proven to everyone how small this God energy really is. What is this suing little Betty Tootin about? There is a universal law, Rick, and you should all know it well. If you live by lawsuits, you shall die by lawsuits.
It does feel like it, doesn't it?
Wake up. No one, especially myself, wanted to bring you down, nor did we want any lawsuits. But every action against me was wrong from the beginning.
Stop. I can't just stand there. We have lawsuits. And it's easy to say, EJ, Rick, whoever started these lawsuits. One Monday morning, Ricky Bushnell called from Florida. And she had agonized over the phone call she had received from George Green, I believe the day before, possibly on Saturday. Anyway, a day or so had passed. She's got her own loan in the Institute. So let's quit calling it an investment. Let's call it what it is. It is a loan. Money comes in. EJ has the arrangement with the metals company. Gold is purchased, and that is used for collateral, again, against which money, operating money, can be borrowed. With every agreement, there is a side agreement. One of the agreements is that you will not pull out your funds. These are for long-term investments if you're going to have to call it any type of investment. Always, from onset, never was it different. The agreement is to leave it in unless total emergencies arrive, and always a reserve would be left for total emergencies. Gold would have to double and move to $800 an ounce before a loan should be withdrawn. Now, everyone signing an agreement or a promissory note or receiving one has at least one side agreement. Some have more than one, depending on what the needs are and the requirements. This program was worked out by none other than our good Mr. Green while he was a founder, director, and officer of the Phoenix Institute. Thank God he is not the one who did finally set up the corporation itself, or you would have nothing now. The only party that has borrowed any large sums of money from the Institute is George Green. And along about the time that Leon Fort put his money into the Institute, under the same types of agreements, was here and was working lovingly with us, doing whatever all the rest of us were doing. And suddenly, when Ann appears, everything is mundane tasks, menial. And she stated herself as being George Green's agent. Now, I don't care what these people say. That was an accident. They didn't know it was EJ on the phone. What are you talking about? That was said to EJ on a speakerphone. She said it. She said it. This is your agent, Ann. Go on. I have to make the notation about the different forms of agreement. George Green borrowed, over that period of time, over $150,000 on a promissory note using books, which he still has, and shows as his copyright. Go on, please.
No, wait.
I'm sorry. The one thing I really wanted to clear up was the fact that Ricky Bushnell called, and they had been in a blue funk down in her neighborhood because George Green had called. And here are his words. George Green just called me, and I have to know what's going on because he said that an entire car full or more had just driven out his driveway, and they were going to come back to Tehachapi, and they were going to put the institute into receivership and pull it down and wipe you out. Now, the first thing Ecker should have done was get an attorney, but that's not the first thing that was done. It was tried to be sorted out. Who? Well, it turned out to have been Leon Fort, and you will notice that he tells on Green and he tells on himself. George Green called John and Eleanor Schroffer. It's right here. He'll read it in a minute. Bud Clark, Leon, and the Schroffers went to Carson City. They came back and immediately came through a personal demand for their money in gold. Not just their money.
Who did that?
I'm telling you as fast as I can scream it. You did it. As a matter of fact, John. And this was handwritten, very poorly done, and it was signed by each individual party. Leon Fort, Eleanor Schroffer, John Schroffer, and Bud Clark. The next thing that happened was that this could not be handled this way. Eleanor Schroffer had a trust, and all the money that ran through Eleanor Schroffer's trust, the checks were made directly to George Green. It was set up in the Institute as a trust. Bud Clark had no agreement through any corporation or otherwise. And all of you now know that Bud Clark got cancer, had to have surgery, and Bud Clark was paid in full. After a meeting of the board of directors, because when a company is put into the mode of receivership, all business functions stop. If you are a lending or borrowing institute, that is the law of the land and corporate regulation. The request was formally done and sent back to them saying, you have no personal funds in the institute. To have a return of funds or whatever is requested here, you will have to handle it properly. If you have a corporate structure, please indicate. Meanwhile, it came back that they were going to go to Jason Brent. George Green had told them to go to Jason Brent. And he was going to finish us off because he knew how it is. Now you tell me who precipitated having to get legal help. A corporation has to have legal counsel. Has to, by law. John came to the house when he realized all of this was taking place. John personally came to the house. And he says, I decided not to go to Jason Brent. We went over there, and Jason Brent was out of his office, and we've decided not to do this. We've decided not to participate in this. Fine, it's dropped. Another demand was to get Eckers off of their corporations, which is truly an anathema to them in the first place. So immediately all the documents, all the paperwork was handled and turned over. Now go ahead, please, and read.
Wake up. No one, especially myself, wanted to bring you down, nor did we want any lawsuits. But every action against me was wrong from the beginning. Every day that passes only draws more people like myself that will stand firm. Little Betty Tootin and Sherry are the only two investors that I have heard of wanting separation other than 3 out of 4 board members appointed by Doris and EJ, a separation which perhaps would not have come to pass at all.
Well, we know
had EJ listened to the board members who wanted to pay us, or had EJ been willing to settle with George Green and me when he agreed to do so?
Nora, as secretary for this corporation, do you recall ones wanting to pay off everybody in this form that he is now stating? While Rod Entz was president of the Institute, he got money from the Bowmans and called it his own, said he got it from his mother. So he also got a note for that amount of money, and he bought the equipment he wanted, and he took it and sold it. That's against the law. You may not sit on the board of a corporation and do insider trading like that. Now, I don't care what they want to say. These are the laws we're dealing with, not the druthers of anybody. Go on, please.
Looking back to when you were office manager for George Green, you signed for some of the Overton Gold marked machine parts. Come now, Rick. You had to know what it was. Why do I know this? Because when helping the Greens move, I was loading the truck when Charles handed me a small box.
Whoops. Who was loading?
That would be Leon.
Uh-huh.
This little box damn near went through the truck bed, me with it,
uh-huh.
As Charles laughed and whispered, "Gold." I care not about the stories told that EJ knew nothing about the gold. Yes, he did, just like a coiled snake waiting for the precise moment to strike.
Oh, did Leon tell you about it, EJ? He had handled it, almost went through the floorboard. He's mad at Charles, he's mad at Rick for not telling. How many did Leon tell? He was there, he handled it, almost went through the floorboard. Go on.
You know that I know you're not stupid, Rick. You may fool everyone about believing machine parts were in those boxes, but I have known better all along. Just like I know Charles is EJ's, quote, walking, talking message recorder, unquote, who never misses a silent fart a mile away. And you, Rick, as
enjoy
I...
Enjoy it, Paul. He's going to get to you in a minute.
And you, Rick, as I remember, are probably EJ's number two reporter. To my ears, George Green's story has never changed from day one when all of us made our trip to Carson City. EJ had called George Green asking if he knew of any more big investors. George's comment? No, not offhand. Why? Because we're sucking air down here. How about the gold?
And, oh.
I better turn the mic off.
How about the gold? Oh, sick.
Lie.
Sick. More than that, EJ did ask him, you said you were going to give us 10% of all sales, send back the funds, and help us with the paper. And all of you were present while he said that in a meeting. He not only did not send help, he took the subscription funds. Of course you were in need. You didn't even have what was sent to do the paper. So go on, please.
This was the day George Green began to wake up and made his call to John and Eleanor, feeling responsible for them and others. He realized that EJ had surely overborrowed to be sucking air. The deal made between EJ and George and why George was to hold the Overton Gold is between George and EJ. It is surely known on a greater level far from Hatton. The bottom line, Rick, is...
Well, I'd argue that. The greater level ain't far from Hatton. Go on, Rick.
The bottom line, Rick, is you knew about the gold when it came in. Charles knew, and therefore EJ had to be lying when he said he didn't know.
No, but Kathy sure did.
So why was I ever named in a lawsuit connected with the Overton Gold? Or why would Hatton ever say, you want your money? Get it from George Green. Just for the record, Rick, before the hearing on the gold in the judge's chambers, George agreed to pay off my notes, US&P, and whatever else.
Now, do you really think, number one, that Leon made it as far as the judge's chambers? Nobody else does. When they were trying to deal with George Green and settle the US&P thing and the gold mess, there was no talk about paying off Leon, I want to tell you really big and straight right now. And finally, after what he now lays out there, plus some other things, he got so angry, he slammed the phone down and called Gene some really colorful names. He would not even further discuss it. Go on.
Before the hearing on the gold in the judge's chambers, George agreed to pay off my notes, US&P, or whatever else, and whatever else. It didn't happen because EJ wanted it all. Hatton recently denied this truth. Also, like supposedly, I and George Abbott were thrown out of the courtroom at the same hearing. Not so. Or how about, I hold my mother, Esther, hostage? Or when I directly confronted Hatton in that open meeting on 10/1/95. Why has this tape never been offered by the Word? All charges that were false to begin with were dismissed against me at the Overton hearing. Yet on that tape, Hatton still calls me a conspirator. Face to face, I confronted many issues, so did Rod and Ed. How could we of such dark forces possibly stand and confront God in His awesome light?
He said it himself, and all of you heard it.
Over and over again, Hatton has stated that George Green wanted us to get our money back so we could invest in his dome project. In open honesty, I confronted this issue as another Hatton lie. You rushed out after that meeting to file a harassment lawsuit against George Green. Can I comment here myself?
Yes, that was personal for Rick.
The federal judge didn't see it that way, which is why we're going to trial. My, how noble. Gene Dixon and Paul Leonthal then came to our home to supposedly help assist us in getting our money returned. We thought, oh yes, finally perhaps we have been heard and money will be brought to the table. Of course, after much conversation and admitting many errors had been made, their only offer was, quote, get rid of George Abbott because he's a liar, cheat, thief, and drunk, and holds your $40,000 hostage. After we defended George and Mary, they soon moved on back to their keeper. This pained us at first because we wanted to believe they were both sincerely trying to help us resolve things. Paul showed his true colors, screaming at me on the phone, F and a line, God. Man, you're going to lose everything if you don't get rid of this guy because you're not going to pay him another cent. But you see, Rick, the name God is still being used here, and sooner or later, this side of all things, these ungodly acts must surface. Yet all of you, especially Hatton, don't seem to care or realize the importance of correcting errors. The so-called dishonorable banks to which we loan our money honor our withdrawals. Yet the ones proclaiming this one God and His chosen people, who supposedly want to bring goodness, honor, integrity, and freedom to a nation in need, do what? They sue and refuse to honor their notes. They put everyone in a box and call it conspiracy, or the Green Brigade. Now, what has Mr. Horn, just defending his clients against the Eckers, have to do with anything?
And what is Mr. Horn doing in his letter?
It is bringing out the true hidden character of these little old people who would harm no one. You have been injured badly, mentally, psychologically, and financially. There is not a day that goes by that we do not feel the extreme conditions brought about by Ecker Hatton's absolute love. There was no conspiracy, Rick. There is no conspiracy, nor any Green Brigade. It is only people questioning and seeing before their eyes absolute distortion. Like Judge Gamble's words, I see a group of swindlers trying to swindle another swindler. In the contact, George Green was the only one called a swindler. You see, Rick, I'm speaking to all of you at this moment who sincerely believe you are doing God's work. Hear me, please. If you and the others do not take a stand to clean up your errors and get your house in order, not Ecker Hatton's house, but your house.
Now.
Your own holy temple.
Let's go back to swindle. What did the Supreme Court say about that statement? 5 justices of the Supreme Court of Nevada, somebody tell me what they said. I want it on the record. This is a business meeting. Nora's read it. EJ, somebody, I don't want to be the mouth all the time. I guess we're going to have...
Loose translation?
Loose is good enough.
George Green stole the gold and hid it in his backyard.
And they found Mr. Green far more at fault than the Institute in any instance. So that took care of your swindler.
They also said that George Green's testimony didn't make any sense.
We will try to gather up some of those and read them onto the record. I guess is the only way we're going to get them shared. I don't know.
I think we read it.
All right.
You will all go down by your own actions. Anyone who tries to tell EJ anything or questions Doris is buried alive with lawsuits and hateful, lying words. Just look around you at the succulents clinging to the Ecker, supposedly Hatton God vine. It takes courage to question where there is no... Let me start over here. It takes courage to question where there is so much valid truth. But those who stand up to be counted shall prevail. Do you sincerely believe that a fourth or fifth dimensional being would demand what this Hatton is demanding, like in the January contact, to sue Leon and get to the heart of things? Recently, Hatton stated that there will be no more sitting on the fence. You are either for me or against me. You will sue these bastards, or you shall not board my ship. On this note, I will end this writing. The words love and blessings in the wrong hands would be chewed up and spit out. So I will just say sincerely, Leon.
Comments. This is an advisors meeting.
Same old. Sounds like he's got somebody to write things for him. He's eloquent. So it's obviously not his word.
He doesn't seem to know what's going on.
No, he told you in this room he didn't know what was going on, that he gets these papers if they come and he doesn't look at them, he doesn't understand them. And when an attorney like George Abbott or any attorney gets someone that disinterested in his own case, they're going to be taken advantage of. After the judges have told Abbott over and over again to drop Eleanor, and he continues to even right up until his last filing, include John Strofer as his client?
I'm not his kind of client. I fired all that stuff back to him.
Well, he still names you, and he still names Eleanor. It's Eleanor Strofer et al. Now. And he doesn't stop, and he got the private messages that literally I had written for the legal staff. And he's just spouted off one of them. What is the legal staff going to do about this? You see, they got into it, and Mr. Horn wanted to throw Gene Dixon out. He stated with his fiery little temper, stamping his little feet, he would not even be in the same room with a disbarred attorney. Well, pretty soon he's not going to be in the room then with himself, because this is irregular at the very least. And when speaking with Mr. Hornback, and when I say I spoke with Mr. Hornback, that is not a slip of Dorma's lip. I spoke with Mr. Hornback. I gave him a rundown of Santa Barbara Savings so he could go check names and places. And he says the only reason that deposition has been called by Horn of Jason Brent is so he can bash the Eckers. He despises the Eckers. He's afraid of the Eckers. He blames them for everything that's ever happened to him publicly. Yes. And so that's fine. Rick should make it known that in his interrogatories where he, in pro per, has asked George about some various and sundry things. He asked him about his relationship with Jason Brent and